Testing, 1, 2, 3.
Welcome to episode
8. Yeah, that part I knew. I've been up since 4 a.m. Work with me. I came straight from the airport to my office.
Man on a mission. All right, we're rolling.
All right. Good?
Yep.
All right, hi everyone. Jared O'Clair here again for episode 8 of Just Jared. In this episode, we're going to sort of unpack the idea of degree completion bachelor's programs and common misconceptions, opportunities, all those things with my guests, Aaron and Chris. Well, I'll let them introduce themselves in 1 minute. But as you all know, fundamentally, I believe in thinking about and rethinking about the way higher education in the U.S. is delivered, whether that's through apprenticeships or other models, but fundamentally all that build on pathways in a bachelor's degree in that pathway is really important. There's some statistics out there that there are 44 million Americans who have some college and no degree. So there's an opportunity to really help those folks complete their degree and advance their career. Fundamentally, we think about pathways from community college to degree completion bachelor's, but there are other pathways that we can think about. And the last thing that I'll say before I have Aaron and Chris introduce themselves and we have a conversation around this, and feel free to comment on anything I've said to this point, you know, the idea of a four-year bachelor degree, or when you talk about a four-year degree, people talk about four-year degrees all the time. That vernacular we're hoping to get away from as well, because fundamentally, I don't think you need to go to school consecutively over 4 years to get your bachelor's degree, or at least that's not the only option. And really moving away from that and thinking about how we can work and learn at the same time and earn our degree is fundamentally a necessary shift to make bachelor's degrees more accessible to more people in the country. So I'm going to pass it to you, Aaron, who is also our resident podcast expert. So she's going to promote her own podcast at the same time.
I am. Well, I do have a podcast called Happy You Asked, which is part of my academic research on happiness. But that's not why I'm here. I am the Associate Dean of Undergraduate Programs here at CPS. So I oversee all of the bachelor's completion programs and our pathway programs. And I'll pass it over to Chris.
Hi, I'm Chris Cook, and I lead the Lowell Institute School, which is represents a part of the portfolio of our bachelor completion programs, and so work very closely with both Aaron and Jared to help promote our programs, build community around bachelor completion and the Lowell Institute School.
Great. So I guess then let's dig into it. Like I said at the top, when we think about bachelor's degrees, myself included, oftentimes I think about pathways from community college to degree completion. Fundamentally, like I said, there's over 44 million or around 44 million Americans who have some college and no degree. So we'd be curious to hear why you think that might be in some sense, why people start and then stop, and how we might sort of take the approach of meeting them where they're at, as opposed to sort of trying to fit them into what the world perceives a bachelor's degree should be.
Yeah, and when we think about, you know, college, we have this traditional sort of Animal House idea in people's heads that you go from high school right in there. But that is a very privileged way of looking at things, and it doesn't fit everybody. And our economics state today, it also doesn't fit that for many people. So some people will start, take a little college, then they have to work, or they have to take care of family. And what happens to them, right? And we're here to serve those people. They're of equal value, of course, and they need flexible offerings that suit where they are. They have to work full-time, take care of families, and so we really think about our programs in bachelor's completion space as meeting people where they are rather than where they, the stereotypes say they should be.
Yeah, and I've been chewing on this a lot recently related to why this is so important. And I think in many ways, it's just keeping with what reality is. You know, for we seem to be very comfortable with after the GI Bill, people went back to college, and what we failed to maybe recognize in that period of time is that most of those folks were not 18-year-olds who just finished high school. They were folks who had some other real-world experience, came back, completed their bachelor's degree, and that's really the period in time in history when all of a sudden now this four-year college, private, everybody's got to go, started because there were so many people graduating college. You fast forward to today where less than 40% of Americans have a bachelor's degree, and of that 40% who actually get a bachelor's degree, many of those students have transferred institutions or maybe went from a community college. So we're talking about the number of people who actually have the traditional linear four-year degree right from high school is very small. Yet there seems to be a universal belief that education is important. Education helps prepare you for career. And so, like, I think we're just being really honest about what type of education is needed for people to be able to upskill into work in a way that's more clear than perhaps we've been able to wrestle, largely because the higher ed sector has benefited from the framework of saying, hey, this is what it needs to look like. And Northeastern is bold enough to say it can look lots of different ways. And in fact, Northeastern's look very different for many, many years. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point also, right? If I think about my own experience growing up, right? My dad went to college on the GI Bill, actually. So he was 22 when he started college, probably, thereabouts. Because of that, like, the expectation was that I went to college. Like, there was no alternative allowed to be contemplated in my household. But I would argue that, and that's the case for many of my friends in my age bracket. But my friends, including myself, are fundamentally switching the way we think, also around this idea that, you know, at 18, you fundamentally, most people have no idea what they want to do with the rest of their life. And the people who can afford the traditional higher education experience often are coming for that word itself, the experience, and the education seems to be a byproduct of the experience in some sense, which is why I like the idea of you know, degree completions and giving people the opportunity to explore some work and maybe even in some cases, maybe many even, mature a bit before they make the commitment to their education and what that might look like for the future. Because education is an equalizer, but, you know, it's only an equalizer if you can access it, and the sector can't scholarship every student, so we have to think about ways that we can engage them, which is why I also think it's really important to think about, you know, getting a job and then thinking about a career and how tuition reimbursement might, you know, help offset the cost of that education. Although I would argue that the tuition reimbursement probably hasn't been changed for a long time. And education is not getting cheaper, so really we should think about what that means as a nation in terms of, you know, how much that tuition reimbursement needs to be to have true impact. But fundamentally, the shift is happening towards, you know, pathways and degree completion bachelors. It's also interesting I'll stop talking in 1 second. It's also interesting when you think about some of the priorities of the federal administration, right, and bringing back manufacturing jobs and all those kind of things, which I don't disagree with, actually. But the people who are going to fill those jobs won't have degrees, but we need to give them a pathway to learning and some more additional skills so that, you know, you can build your career over time and maybe become a manager, and then we backfill at the entry-level jobs. Because the thing that there's two things. Entry-level, people say all the time to me, entry-level jobs are going away. Entry-level jobs are going to change in things like computer engineering, computer science, and things like that. Fundamentally, the majority of the jobs that exist aren't going to go away, and will change a little bit, but not massively, with AI and other things coming to play. And if we're going to go back to a technology, if we're going to go from a technology and knowledge economy to a combination of skill economy with that, we have to think about how that looks and how we can support that work, because, you know, great, we can bring manufacturing here, but who's going to do those jobs? And who's going to want to do those jobs if they don't see a pathway to growth, right, is also the question.
You know, I was thinking about what Chris said with the GI Bill, and the expansion of that then became, well, you must get this bachelor's degree so you can make more and go into immense debt for that too, right, at the same time, which is not sustainable. And obviously as a nation, we said, well, this doesn't make a lot of sense. There's not the same payoff at the end, and nobody wants to start a life massively in debt. So.
Come on, I do. No, I don't.
So when we think then, the alternative, if it doesn't make sense to do that and then go to work, but then you get sort of stuck, right?
That's
especially
right.
In leadership. Think of my mom, who went, got to college, then, you know, dropped out, and she had to work really hard to prove herself because she didn't have that degree. If she had had an easier pathway to finish it, then she would have had more opportunities more quickly. And that's really what I look at our programs. How can we, what are the skills that they need, both the technical skills, but also the durable skills,
mm-hmm.
to make a good leader and rise up and manage in your in whatever employee area you're working in?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fundamentally a good point, right? Like, and people have heard me say this before, but my own opinion is that all of educational programming should be built on the foundation of durable skills, because those are translatable to every industry. And largely, you know, at some point when you're being promoted, it's less about your technical skills and more about your durable skills, even in higher education.
100%. There was research a couple years old that showed that something like, I want to say 60-something% of people lose their jobs not because they don't have the technical skills, but because they don't have the durable skills. They're not easy to work with, or they don't understand how to work with other people well, or lead them. And so we integrate that throughout our curriculum already, because it's so critical. And then we expand on the pathway of the technical skills on top of that.
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, when I talk to employers, almost all of them tell me they're looking for somebody who fits their culture. They'll worry about the technical skills after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, bachelor's degree, like, a little bit under attack. Maybe that's an overstatement about how the news is projecting, right? We don't need this bachelor's degree to be ready for the world. And that's true, largely. However, I think the idea that higher ed continues to play this very important role of certifying people at various levels to say they've crossed some threshold educationally to have the skills, the durable skills, the technical skills that are ready for a wide landscape of jobs is super important, because the alternative is that we rely on the private sector and the companies that they have to, we're gonna, can you cut that portion?
Yeah, you can repeat what you were saying.
The town is calling, which is, my kid is absent today, so they're probably calling me, why is he out? The alternative is that the private sector is then singularly responsible for the training and amplification of their own employees, which is a really risky proposition for an employee to hope that they landed in the perfect company that's going to be focused on their long-term career and educational growth, because the bottom line is that the dollar and the bottom line is the most important thing for any private company, right? How are we producing for our shareholders, et cetera? Less about the individual learners development over time to service the company and service their own life. So you can't totally rely on the private sector to do the work. And if we then just say, well, okay, well, there's some other landing spot for people to upskill into, that's going to be publicly funded training opportunities. Maybe that's the K-12 system, or maybe it's publicly funded workforce programs. But the idea that those institutions are going to be prepared to credential people at a level that is trusted by the private industry is a long shot too. So higher ed, private institutions, higher ed, public institutions need to play a role continuing, no matter what the landing spot is. And the bachelor's degree is the most relevant kind of collateral that we still have in that overall ecosystem, which is why it's incredibly important, even if under attack in the present 2025.
I think it's interesting, right? Because I think two things. Fundamentally, we've committed our lives to being educators, and there's some training, perhaps albeit on the job for in higher education, that goes with that, right? We try to deploy pedagogy and think that's not what a company's gonna focus on. So I fight that battle every day of my life, especially in the international conversations that I have with partners, because they're just like, no, the company will do it, or we'll just do it ourselves. I'm like, yeah, but you don't use any any theory. You're just like throwing information at them, and they're not going to consume it. And then the other thing that I think is really interesting, and as many people know already, I'm a trained scientist, and scientists and science in general is communicated to the public poorly. I agree the bachelor's degree is under attack, but it needs to be more nuanced than that, right? I think the four-year bachelor's degree should be under attack, but the degree itself doesn't have to be 4 years.
Yeah.
And we should try to change the language so that a bachelor's degree is that currency that you trade in, but you can get there through staff credentials or whatever the other things might be that lead you there. It doesn't have to be 4 years after high school.
Well, and this is where I think CPS in particular is very different. There's been a loss of trust in the bachelor's degree because there's an expansion, especially online programs, and then employers were finding that, hey, we're not guaranteed that these people know anything when they get out. And by connecting with industry, which is really what we do, what is happening then in the workplace that, and what do you need from your employers? And really thinking about that correctly, and then tailoring our programs to that so that there's more trust built up. And when they come, it's not just, yeah, I had this bachelor's degree, but here's what I did.
Right.
That's, within the workplace and XN projects and co-ops, things like that. Here's what I actually did so they can say, oh, yes, you do have these skills. You have been building them. And it is not just, I wrote something nice and I have this paper.
They might not even write it anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
ChatGPT might. But fundamentally, that's right also, right? I think as the University of Co-op or experiential learning, for me, it's that and other industry projects that are, I mean, what resumeable activities and can we give to our students that are built on actual skills that they have, which is also why, I think that using a non-credit credential like a badge, even just to acknowledge that you have this skill set coming out of a class where you got credit, to me makes a lot of sense.
I agree completely. And thinking about how these things like durable skills, it's not just that you learn about them in theory, but to apply them to these projects. And this is one of the reasons why we've been thinking a lot about how to do co-ops within one's own job.
Mm-hmm.
So you can apply these projects in your classes to the actual workplace you're at and get credit for that, which is going to be much more useful. And then upskill immediately. I mean, your manager's going to see that, your boss is going to see that, and then
that's
move
right
to the next level.
Yeah, no, exactly right. I mean, I think when I used to run the biotech program, we used to have probably half of our students did their co-op at work, their own job work, not at some other job. We asked them to do something outside of what they did daily so they could learn a different part of the company. But, I think also that's a really great point, right? We need to think about credit for work credit. I also think we should think about credit for lived experience. I mean, I'm a dad, and I would like to think I have some skills that came from that. Probably some of them are not good, some of them are hopefully okay, but it could be all transferable, right? And
that's the power of negotiation.
Yeah, totally. Especially with teenagers. And then if you think about, AI and being able to sort of assess those skills and what that might bring to the table, it could change the game.
Yeah, that's what's exciting. We do a lot of what's called PLA, prior learning assessment, in bachelor's completion space. And that, for that, our students show us what they've done,
yep,
right? And then they can get credit for specific classes for that, and it's all reviewed by our faculty. But we are really looking here in CPS and how to use AI to help us with that, so we can give our students even more credit for their actual lived experiences.
Chris, you're thinking.
Yeah, no, I'm cautious to shift the conversation.
All right, don't talk then.
Well, it's funny. I joined CPS and the bachelor's completion program, and then also Lowell Institute School, largely because of its mission. And just sitting here, we're talking about how we open access to folks, continue to promote the bachelor's degree as a in different forms, a way to kind of access different career opportunities and make sure you're making a livable income for your family or for yourself moving forward. And these are, in many ways, ideas that we're fighting for in a climate where some of that is questioned on whether that's real. But the benefit of what we're doing here is it really deeply connects back to Northeastern's roots. That's kind of where we started, which is providing this degree, these kind of learning opportunities that upskill people. And also the Lowell Institute School, really dating back to the 1830s, when a gentleman, John Lowell Jr., left money to freely publicly educate the people of Greater Boston in a context when Harvard and other institutions were there for the quote-unquote elites of society to kind of pursue their education. So this idea of continuing to open up pathways using higher education to do it is not a new idea, just kind of the way in which we have to nuance the argument is shifting a bit. And what's great, and Aaron's talked a little bit about this, is that the quality of the program. So we're not a new arriving institution just showing up to saying, hey, we want to dance in this online space or this flexible learning space. We are an institution that has been historically connected back to this mission and have been really harnessing the quality of our programs over and over and over again to ensure that when folks are showing up to us, it's a way in which we're assuring that everybody that comes to us has the chance to learn and be prepared for the world. And the last thing I'll say is, even with all that, it doesn't mean that everybody in our programs is going to maximize the educational opportunity and be maximally effective in their life moving on, because the single variable often in all of this is the individual person on how they take advantage of the opportunity they have to then jump into the world. And that's really something that exists across all of this, is that we're not guaranteeing success. We're creating space and opportunity for people to launch from, but it doesn't mean that everybody that's coming to us is going to be successful. In the same way that somebody that goes to a residential campus, I mean, I'm sure we all know people that went to residential college campuses and weren't successful, but we are giving a foundation from which people can launch in a really different and flexible way that I think is important to note.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. By the way, if you're one of those people who went to a traditional four-year bachelor's degree and didn't finish yet, come see us. in that space. I mean, I think it's also interesting, right? Because you have elite institutions, and then you have. I don't think any institution has to be one thing, I guess is what I'm saying, which is fundamentally what I enjoy about Northeastern. We can span the gap or span the spectrum of opportunities. I also think it's really interesting when you think about the bachelor's completion space. That's just my. And the workforce space in general, but workforce development space. It's also giving people those opportunities, but it's also about a couple of other things. I would argue it's about cheerleading. Like, you can do this. I can't tell you how many people I've taught in my life who were in workforce programs who came and told me that somebody told them they were too stupid to do math and that turned them off from school. Not that I want to pick on math, but you know, that's what I often hear. So, you know, building trust, cheerleading the learner on and give them the top, not only give them the opportunities, but give them the skills and the tools to be successful. I also think that a lot of it in these spaces has to be engagement with community, because in some instances, even if you're in your 20s, it might be, you know, you're living with your parents and your auntie lives next door and your grandma and grandpa live down the road. You got to sell it to the whole entire family. And then also it's an opportunity to tell them that they can do the same thing. And take advantage, but it's a really, in my opinion, it's a really high touch type of engagement that we try to deploy. Well, I guess it's not my opinion that we try to deploy that. We do try to deploy a high touch engagement and support the students, because fundamentally, absolutely, everybody takes their own path, and you know, you could join a degree completion program and decide that you still don't want to finish college, and that's not unrealistic. But our goal is that every student graduates.
Well, and that shows in our population, there's not, say, what's the demographic of your student all over the place, right?
Yeah, totally.
Because we have people of all ages who come back, even in their 60s, they're like, I want to finish it now. Or, you know, 21, 22, yeah. First out of community college, middle age, from all different walks of life.
Okay.
So it has to be high touch, because it's so individualized for what they need and what their goals. So it's not like with residential colleges where they're all, I'm going to march my 4 years, and we can, together as a group, tailor that. Here at CPS, we have to individually tailor it for each student and make sure that they're getting what they need.
It's actually a really good point. It made me think of something when you were talking about the age variation in the student population. And society loves it, because I think it may have been just this weekend, or whenever college football started, there was a 60-year-old man who just went back to get a degree in bachelor's degree, and he was in the marching band.
Yeah, yeah, just so he could, LSU, just so he could march.
Thank you, yeah.
I thought that was great. Yeah,
yeah.
It's like, good for you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Never too old.
That's exactly right. And I love, when I was teaching, I love teaching the students who come back. The quote-unquote non-traditional, which I don't like that.
We don't say that.
But they bring a wealth of life experience.
Exactly.
And that enriches the classroom 1,000%. And they teach as much as the instructor in many cases, like about how to do the work itself.
The gentleman that was at LSU, and I appreciate that
you
story.
Probably know him.
I don't know. I know a lot of people in Greater Boston, not in Louisiana. But so we are students, if let's just assume 18 maintains as the steady age in which people graduate high school. Like the reality with the rise of healthcare costs and the way that that's impacting every industry's budget, and we could get into that as a concept of conversation about how that's just adding to it, every organization's challenges. But bottom line is, it's going to result in everybody working till they're 70 or 75 years old, except for the folks that, you know, really hit it great and are able to put tons of money away, and maybe you have a pension job, which are more and more don't exist, right? The idea that the folks graduating high school today are going to work till the middle of their 70s is real. That's a 57-year career window. So the idea that, like, you don't continue to think about how to upskill yourself through formal credentials to navigate the decade over decade churn to have something that means something on a broader long-term trajectory than a micro-credential in biotech. As much as I love our micro-credentials, right? The idea is that's a moment in time, micro-credential. Gets me that entry job now. That micro-credential might not mean the same thing 10 years from now when the field, but what will mean is a bachelor's degree from Northeastern will sustain its value. And so, you know, and that's just part of this is like, this is a real world long-term offering to an individual to say, come to us, come to other places like us, but you're taking care of yourself 20, 30 years down the future when you're still gonna be working. And the crazy thing is, for that 35-year-old who shows up without a degree, who might be like, why am I doing this so late? They still have a 40-year career ahead of them. So this idea that we're adding credentials or degrees or whatever it is over time is essential to just long-term health and viability for any individual, which is scary to think about, but that's our world.
Well, it's also exciting. The workplace is much different, the workforce. I mean, now you don't start that company right out of college and stay there for 50 years, right? It's an average of 3 different career shifts that people have over their lives. And I mean, a bachelor's degree from, I can't say anywhere, but I can say from Northeastern will help you navigate those durable skills, because that's how we design it to make sure that that happens, so that as it shifts, you're like, all right, turn the wheel this way, let's keep going.
Good news also, Melissa, my wife, good news for you. So I won't be the only one working until I die. See, there you go. But that's by my choice, probably, more than anything else, because I like what I do. I'd love to take an opportunity to hear, within the realm of what's possible, so respecting privacy, about some of our bachelor students and successes and your interactions with them.
Chris, unfortunately, for being an associate dean, most of my interactions are with things that are going really, really well or really, really poorly.
Yes, I can relate to that.
Yes. So I get to see them at their biggest moments and their hardest moments. So, you know, Chris gets to interact a little bit more with the middle parts.
Yeah, you know, we had first and foremost, I think the range of individuals that come to our bachelor's program is incredible. And I say that in recognition of age. We ran a workforce program recently. The average age was 38 upon arrival. That doesn't quite mirror our bachelor's completions, but it's pretty close. Racially, we have students from all levels of identity coming to us, right? From all over the world, immigrants with stories telling back to their origin stories in the United States from all over the world. It's just a really incredible mix of individuals. We had an event 2 weeks ago for our undergraduate scholarship awards, and the energy and enthusiasm for taking agency of their own life and being grateful for the opportunity to provide to them through some scholarships, but then just like the range and breadth of what they were engaged with was tremendously inspiring, and that's really what keeps us going here at CPS and trying to kind of lean in and get better and better each and every day. One thing I'll note, though, is, you know, we have students who come to those events with a child in tow. Like, they will say, here's my daughter who I had to pick up at, you know, aftercare, and then I ran over because I wanted to celebrate this event. You'll have folks who are late career shifters who are saying, I've done a career in finance and now I want to do psychology because I'm interested in actually leaning into mental health support because it's, I have some family connection there. And we have students like that as well. And then we have folks who, I'm not going to name folks, but one, the student speaker that came was a gentleman who actually got his start in Northeastern by working at Jared's lab in this winter of, or the spring of 2020, when we were doing some the COVID lab to assess, and he was just really a front end lab technician at that spent, and then dedicated himself to upskilling and getting his bachelor's degree now in biotech, and is really, you know, he's running a lab in another organization, and a gentleman that, you know, like at some point latched onto something and was able to kind of take a step forward. So those are the types of stories that we see again and again. And the beauty is, right, you can't really predict where they're coming from demographically. And that's the real special part about CPS is it's, you show up, we're gonna see who you are, and then we're gonna see who you wanna become and hopefully help you on a pathway there.
You know, one of the things that was very exciting for me recently was the celebration for the PathMaker program, which, I was talking there with a mother of one of the graduates, and she just gushed about how this opportunity is going to change her son's life completely. He was, didn't know what to do, where to go, and this program, you know, 8 weeks, going to have a job. And it shifts everything, and she's selling it to everyone around, like, when's the next cohort, because this is absolutely amazing. Yes. So those types of things, you're exactly right. We can't predict. You know, you can't say it's this type of student. It's whoever needs us.
Yep.
And that's all sorts of ages and locations and identities.
Yeah, I think that's great. Right, and I think fundamentally what it boils down to is we will do our best to meet you where you're at and help you to where you want to go. And you might not know where you want to go still, but that's okay.
I'm wondering if we can, as we're closing up here, I want to interject, going back to the financial piece question really quickly, to have you all speak to the reality of the situation is money is one of the reasons people don't go back to school. So what are the ways that, what are the things that people can do to maybe access resources? You talked a little bit about, companies reimbursing tuition, but there's also scholarships, there's like federal financial aid, like. So maybe there's places people can go to like access that path into it that maybe they're not aware of.
Sure.
I can lean in on that if that's helpful.
So I think also something that's interesting about bachelor's degrees, and we've touched on it a bit, is and it's something I think about all the time with my kids at almost college age, or my daughter a senior in high school, is the cost of education, right? And what that looks like in some of these spaces. And for me, in a lot of the pathway approaches that we take and think about are also fundamentally, hopefully, reducing the cost of our bachelor's degrees. But would love for your insights into other ways that people can think about financial constraints and what other tools and opportunities are out there to help support their learning beyond their employer or beyond their employer.
Yeah, structurally, there we can get to some things. But first and foremost, you know, you hear this sticker price, and I think now there's something like 10 colleges in Massachusetts over $90,000 a year. Our residential campus might be one of them, or might be just underneath. I don't know.
Just for fairness, that includes room and board.
Includes room and board. And so
not
people,
that it makes it any better.
It's a lot. It's a lot of money. And there are factions of the population that can afford that, that that's the sticker price, that that's what they pay. But the reality is...
But by the way, just to interject,
yeah.
As somebody who has, again, we have tuition reimbursement, so great, my daughter can come here for free. If she couldn't come here for free, being able to afford $90,000, even if I can afford $90,000
yeah.
a year, means I'm taking a hit someplace else. I'm saving less for retirement. I'm not going on vacation or whatever that might be. So So I actually think the population who can afford those prices is fundamentally way smaller yeah. than the world acknowledges.
Yeah. 100%, I agree.
Yeah. And so they're, you know, like, that's so the sticker price, some people can pay for that. The sum, again, to Jared's point, super tiny. And for most folks, there's other resources that make it accessible. That's about the residential campuses that have that sticker price. Then there's other places that people don't think about, and CPS, if we can get into that, is one of those that's more affordable just from the sticker price than many of the other places. And there's other, you know, similar higher ed settings where that's the case too, across the country, et cetera. But beyond that, there are a couple things that people need to be aware of. One is the best way to kind of continue to proceed forward in a college is to continue to make friends with the folks that are at those decision tables and take seriously kind of your own self-advocacy in the space of working within the institution that you're in to find ways to think about funding your application, your degree. And that means staying connected with the financial aid office. That means staying connected with folks who oversee scholarship processes. So to be your best advocate in that space, I can't emphasize the importance of individually pursuing some of those pathways more and believing that you have the right to show up to those conversations and demand those conversations. But beyond that, federal financial aid provides a generous pathway to some funding. And then there's many scholarship opportunities. And if you work full-time or even part-time, it's very likely, and especially if you're with a big employer, that there are tuition remission policies or tuition reimbursement policies that go into there. And those are often done in a way that is beneficial to the company from a tax perspective to execute. So you need to be paying attention to those or searching for companies that you might work at part-time that could also pay for part of your degree.
And those are all a myriad of companies. I think Starbucks has a tuition
yes.
reimbursement program. McDonald's, I think, has one.
Yeah. So looking at the college, seeing kind of do they have any programs or partnerships with corporations, and then corporations that might have this direct partnerships with institutions, really finding that way. There's often money that is available there. But at CPS, I say all that, we have worked really, really hard to figure out how to make our programming accessible and flexible and affordable. And I'll just name that from a cost perspective. If you show up, let's just imagine you're showing up with 60 transferable credits into our institution. Maybe that's from work experience or community college or some other, maybe you served in the military, that runs about $33,000 for the rest of the degree. And when you start chopping that up after federal financial aid, after scholarship, et cetera, you can really get to a place where the degree is affordable. And if even in the worst case scenario, you're not able to pay for it all as you're going to school, the debt line on that is not to the tunes of what you see the news about, where people are graduating college with hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. The debt that you would leave college with would be a manageable debt, especially if you're graduating with a Northeastern degree that can help you get that first entry job that might have a $10,000 or $20,000 annual increase from where you might be at any given moment. So there's just, it's a conversation that needs to be dissected and help bring people to the door of the conversation, because the reality is most people just hear costs and they just walk away from the door altogether. Like, this isn't even a room I want to be in. And we need to continue to do a better job of saying, nope, the door's open. Why don't you come in and talk about it a little bit and we'll help you figure this out.
CPS is honestly the best kept secret.
Anywhere,
pretty much. Because you do get that Northeastern degree for a fraction yeah. of the cost. And there are so many scholarships, so many, depending on where you are. Just go to our website, scholarships, CPS, Northeastern, and you'll see that this can be completely affordable. It's the reason I'm here. I moved all the way across the country to do this, because we offer this opportunity for people at an affordable place, affordable price, at Northeastern, one of the top schools in the world.
Yeah, I do want to, I will say something that many people won't like, but I also do think that the idea that you're going to get a 100% free education is one that I actually don't believe in, because I actually believe that you should invest in yourself. Now, I want to make it affordable, so I don't want to bankrupt anyone, clearly, but I want you to invest in yourself for your own success, right? And fundamentally, in my own experience, if you have a little quote-unquote skin in the game, money in the game, you're more apt to pursue the opportunity to its maximum. So, you know, I actually think that you know, I took out loans to go to school, but I took out manageable amount of loans so that I could invest in my future. So this idea that higher education should be, we should be scholarshiping everyone 100% is unrealistic. But also I think fundamentally you want to show your, I mean, take pride in yourself, invest in your own future, right? Like don't, I mean, I wanted to invest in my future for education. I want to buy a house, all those things. It's the same sort of thing. So
just in a manageable way. I had taken out more loans than I would have liked. But then I worked at a state school, and for long enough that that was then forgiven. I don't want somebody to take out as many as I had.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, exactly.
But to still, yes, invest in your future, because that where you put your money, right, it matters.
Totally matters. Yeah, and like Chris said, the long term gain on a degree could be. Likely will be tens of thousands of dollars over a lifetime. Mm-hmm. Probably more than that if you're working until you're 75.
You know, in large part, I'm like at this table because in many, many years ago, I read a fact that the an individual with a bachelor's degree makes on average $1 million more over the course of a lifetime than a high school degree. $1 million, right, over the course of a lifetime. That was in 2003 or four. So I think if anything, that gap has increased. And it's just something to be really cognizant of. This long-term investment lines you up to access that $1 million or more over time that you might not have access to. And we can argue whether that's right or not, but those are facts that look at entire populations of people. And you might be the outsider that doesn't need a college degree to make the type of income that others do. But from a math perspective, it's the best way to invest in yourself is to put as much security as you can, and especially in this climate where you're going to have 6-7 jobs by the time you're 75, which is realistic to think about, having something that means that holds value over time is really the best bet you can make for yourself.
I also, not necessarily the conversation we're having, but I also do think it's interesting and important to think about too, like, you know, if you're going to invest in yourself, maybe that means you don't go to college at 18. Maybe you go at 22 or whatever it might be. Now, yes, I will totally acknowledge that that's going to be especially at a traditional residential school, will be an interesting experience because you're going to probably be one of the older people in the classroom with a bunch of teenagers in some sense. But people do it, and it needs to be thought about as an option more frequently than it is. Like going to cut from college to high school is not the only pathway, and the only and bachelor completion is not the only pathway. We're wrapping up here, so I'm gonna give you each your last thought. I'm not gonna give you a prompt, so it's freely available to you.
Could I actually interject and give a prompt?
Sure.
I've been writing down a whole bunch of questions. Okay, so the prompt that I would like to do is, like, realistically, investing in yourself is fabulous. It's awesome. Everyone should do it. But the reality of the situation is we are encouraging people to invest in themselves, but that also comes with the sacrifice, right, in some other part of your life, right? And so to someone who may not have the funds or the conducive environment or may have a child and they are on the fence as to, like, is this really worth it right now, with all of the arguably misinformation about whether or not completing a bachelor's degree is worth it or not, what would you say to that person who is seriously contemplating, yes, I want to come to school, yes, it's going to be a sacrifice, yes, it's a hefty investment, I'm not entirely sure if it's entirely worth it because I can't see long term right now. Mm-hmm. So when you're thinking of crafting your answer, think of the person who they see a future in their life where maybe they're excelling, but the reality that they look around, they're like, I don't know if I even have.
Even if you don't make a financial sacrifice.
You're making some sort of sacrifice. You might be a mom and you can't, like, be there all the time that you would like to be for your kids or whatever. You might be, you know, the sandwich generation where you're taking care of your parent and you're taking care of your kids. Like, there are sacrifices. I mean, I don't have those responsibilities, but I tell people all the time when I want to get my MBA, I had so many sacrifices that I had to give up. So when you're crafting that message, think about that person who ideally just can't dig themselves out of the hole that they're looking at right now, or there is a sacrifice there that they're unsure if it's worth to pursue. You know what I mean?
No, I do. Before coming to Northeastern, I worked in Arkansas, which has a tremendous amount of poverty. And the number one indicator of whether or not someone will stay in poverty is the education level of their mother. Number one. So when, if someone's thinking, my life's really complicated, right? This will be a sacrifice. Yes, it will be. But you're making an investment, not just for you, but for generations after. And so you don't have to do it all at once. You can take a class, another class. Maybe one semester, you have a little more time, you take two. But you're not just building something for yourself. It's for your whole family. And you're also showing the people around you what can be done. That you can grow bigger in your career, you can have bigger dreams. And yes, it can be done little by little. It's a marathon, it's not a race, not a sprint. And so yes, you come back and we will support you. If it's one class, if it's two, we'll keep supporting you over and over as you make your way towards that, for your family, for your future, for your community.
That's beautiful.
I know,
thank you.
That's good, yeah. That was super good. No pressure, Chris. I'm not answering this question because these are your programs, so I'm just going to see
you guys do it. No, and Aaron, I think connecting it back to that data point about your kind of matrilineal line of education predicting your own, or the best indicator of economic kind of viability over time is fascinating. And I would just take a different spin on, like, it's really hard to make the short-term decision that's for your long-term gain in today's society. And I don't mean to, like, harm social media, et cetera. And I've spent a lot of time kind of seeing young people and navigating social media. But it's just really hard to make decisions that you can stack on top of each other that lead to long-term gains. On top of that, from social media, you believe that everybody else is, like, perfect, that, like, if you're not showing up to the party perfectly and kind of moving forward, that why are you showing up to the party at all? And, like, the wild thing is that the people who are stacking days on top of each other are probably not spending a lot of time worried about social media and the impact there. And the folks on social media who are presenting their life as perfect, there's lots of data that suggests that social media is driving a mental health crisis in lots of different ways. So we're, like, really turning to the audience that is, there's research that backs that there's mental health challenges as being the one that's going to deter us from a more longer term play. And I say both of those things connected because, like, what we're really emphasizing is, like, take that first step. Like, don't worry about the long term, and that if you take that first step, it'll do the second step and the third step. But measure your success on just, like, doing that one thing. Take that one class. The next semester, kind of lean forward. And over time, you know, and to kind of connect it back to Aaron's points, maybe you're that mother, maybe you're that father, maybe you're that single person engaging with your family in other ways to kind of uplift, or maybe you're just an autonomous learner kind of pursuing your own benefit. You're going to take a step that meaningfully impacts your life and the lives of those around you by doing the one step at a time approach. And that's something we should be celebrating. And I think we actually do really celebrate that at CPS, which we care about. You've made your first step. Great. Now that first step doesn't mean anything. Make your next step. And that's a big part of how we communicate accordingly too.
Good job.
Okay. A lot of fun.
I'm gonna wrap it up.
Sure. Thanks Chris and Aaron for being with me today and sharing your insights into the degree completion bachelor space and many other tangential and relevant topics. We look forward to seeing the success of our programs, but most importantly, the success of our students and our learners as they pursue education as that great equalizer for generational growth and generational wealth. And we look forward to, and I look forward to engaging all of you in our next episode. But until then, remember, if you see me walking with my head down around campus, jump in front of me and say, hey, but I'm just Jared.